Once you go under contract, you've got to be on top of every deal every week, just to say everything is on track, but you need to be checking on all aspects of it, share it with other partners, because there's a lot of moving parts that have to come together for closing.
Real estate is about freedom, choice freedom, time freedom, and money freedom, and the impact you can make with that freedom. But it doesn't come without cost. Your freedom takes work. That's why Neil Timmons brings together the tools you need to build your real estate legacy, from tips and tricks to interviews with industry titans. It's all here in one place. Real Grit. Let's get to it.
Everybody, welcome to Real Grit. I've got Ron Rohde here with me. He's the founder of a commercial real estate law firm, and he's an investor as well. Ron became a real estate investor before becoming a lawyer and currently combines his career and his passion for helping people achieve their goals. So I'm excited to have him here. It's going to be a fun conversation. Ron, how are you?
Hey, Neil, living the dream. Thanks for having me on.
I'm excited that you're here. It's going to be a fun one. I've never had an attorney on who's both an investor and an attorney. So it's fun to talk to somebody who gets to wear two hats.
For sure. I put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. Before we dive real deep, tell me where you started. Everybody had an entry point in real estate. What was your first investment?
Yeah. You know, I think I had a typical start in that SFR world. Mm. So just, you know, buying a couple of the rentals, working class product, had debt on it. I think the only difference for me was that my parents grew up in commercial real estate. So they both own their own business. They've had office, land, lots of rentals, note lending. So I was very comfortable with commercial real estate just to start. And, you know, credit to them. Tell the story when I was 16, they buy me a car and I'm all excited. I get, you know, my own transportation. They say, no, here's, you know, Saturday morning. You got to take these keys over to the tenant, drop these papers off the title company. Oh, go do this. Go meet the plumber at this vacant house and go do that. I'm like, wow, you know, it's a lot of work, but pre-cell phone days, you go to a house, a vacant house with nothing to do and talk to the plumber. You just stand there because there's nothing to do. And plumbers like to talk. And it's one of those jobs. They can talk while they do their work. You know, it really laid the foundation for me to grow a SFR portfolio. So at the point, I had about six properties and an Airbnb, had a partner. I had, you know, with my brother and that sort of thing. But then I sold everything and went into industrial.
What year was that that you went into industrial?
That was about 2018, 2019.
Okay. Yeah. What was the deciding factor? What had you pivot into industrial?
Again, this is the right asset class or the best asset class. That's what I hear a lot. What's the best one for me? The best one is based on your goal.
Correct.
And for me, at that point in my life, I was recently married. We just had a kid. I was, you know, starting off in my law practice. I did not have time. I had probably more capital given, you know, all my gains from selling these houses. I had more money than time. And so I was looking for an asset class that was very hands-off. I wanted long leases. I wanted non-complaining tenants. And I wanted buildings that they were functional, even if they were leaking. I mean, almost literally like the industrial tenants, it can almost leak as long as it doesn't touch their stuff. You know, it can leak along the side of the wall, for example, as long as the doors work and maybe say the roof doesn't leak. That's really all they care about. And you don't have the kind of litany of sensitive office worker problems that, hey, you know, the plants died in the front landscaping or, you know, God forbid, elevators. I don't know if you've ever owned elevators, but they are so expensive and such a pain.
Yeah.
That's the kind of problems I wanted to avoid. I did that kind of overview, landed on triple net industrial. Maybe I would have ended up in multifamily. I have a lot of friends in the space. Yeah. And, but anyway, that's how I chose it because for me at the time, it was the right fit. So I could deploy, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 at a time and not have to worry about it for a couple of years. That's why I want to just collect the rent checks.
Yeah. You can really concentrate your investment in a better fashion than in a single family, right? You can only employ so many dollars in a property for it to still make sense. How have you built that out? How do you find deals? What's that? Do you have partners? Do you have structure? Do you have employees? What it looks like?
Starting from the end, yes, we have employees. Yes, we have partners. There's just a couple of us. We happen to be mostly lawyers, but you know, we're all just kind of at that friends and family joint venture. I have like a YouTube video where I talk about solo joint venture, which is kind of that friends and family raise.
Yeah.
And then you do their full-blown Reg D kind of 506. And then you have like kind of funds, but that's the scale of money. And I think a lot of people skip over joint venture because it's deeper capital, I would say, than you know of. And it's very easy for us to raise money on our smaller deals, right? Our price points are probably between $3 to $6 million. It's easy for us. And we can just PG kind of local bank relationship debt. But to that extent, we have one partner who is more focused on acquisitions. We have a list of, I would say, every single asset in DFW infill that fits our criteria. We're, you know, buying smaller buildings, sub 100,000 square feet, preferably single tenant. It's got outdoor storage. It's got yard space, whatever. And we just have a list and we go down and we call them and we email them and we skip trace and do all this. But one of the things that I would say is, again, we have confidence, rightly or wrongly, that we can put out all these mailers all the time, because if it's a good deal and good price, we'll close. We just kind of have that confidence in our friends and family network. But that's how we source it. We do, you know, manage full-time VA type help, sure, because as you kind of noted, it's not a lot of work, but it is some work. Mostly, I think, on tenant transition, a little bit of financing and accounting type questions, but it's nothing like, hey, there's an emergency. Somebody needs to go to the site to meet this electrician.
Right.
We don't have those types of emergencies. Yep. And so, yeah, it can be definitely self-managed with a little bit of help. And so luckily, you know, my law firm's of the size and I have that experience hiring VAs.
Yeah, you can absorb it there. So it sounds like a very well-defined criteria in which you purchase, a well-defined criteria in where you purchase, and then you just market the heck out of them. You just stay on top of them to be able to generate direct to seller, somebody to raise their hand and go, I've got an interest in selling. And then I suspect, based on what you've already described to me, you've got a well-defined criteria financially in a model standpoint that I must hit in order to pull that trigger. And then you package it with friends and family, local debt, a local bank, and roll it from there.
Absolutely.
Is it fair to say that a whole bunch of people in this world make investing way more complicated than what it needs to be?
I think it is as complicated as you want it to be.
Yeah.
Or you need it to be, but that doesn't mean it should by any means. You know, if that's an impediment to you getting started, I think people way overcomplicate it.
Everything's always not rosy. Going through with the tenants and maybe through a transition of tenants, is there anything that comes to mind your ownership over the last several years with your tenant?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the biggest friction or you know, lesson is maybe not with tenants, but it's like the acquisitions process. That is really a critical, critical time from when you actually go under contract to when you close. Don't need to have every day scheduled out, but every week for sure, you know. And I think I'm definitely guilty of letting 2 weeks slip by, 10 days, and, you know, some light checking in on vendors or, hey, how's that going? Or you really driving the bus and you're the only person who's money and equity is at stake and the deal and everything. And so maybe you get lucky with a seller that can cooperate with you and give you a little extension. Maybe you get lucky and you beg and plead and your lender can pull some strings and close faster or, you know, get an off committee meeting and get it approved. But you don't want to count on those. I would say that's probably my biggest hindsight thing is once you go under contract, you've got to be on top of every deal. If nothing else, just to say, okay, everything is on track, but you need to be checking on all aspects of it. Have your checklist, work it, be in that document, Google Doc it, share it with your other partners so that we're clear on everybody is touching some piece of puzzle, because there's a lot of moving parts that have to come together for closing.
And it's fair to say time kills deals.
Yep. Time kills all deals.
Time kills all deals. The longer that thing moves on, or if you ever have to push back due diligence or closing, sooner or later, that time kills all deals. Talk to me about the law practice side. You work with investors to help presumably guide them and defend them and make sure that they get wealthier and the wealthy stay wealthy, right? To protect their legacy. What do you do there? What does that look like? And how does that play out on a transaction per transaction basis?
Yeah. So we're absolutely commercial real estate, transactional law firm. We don't go to court, don't do litigation. But what we do is we help investors, you know, maybe particularly who haven't done a ton of transactions. Or what I would say is they may own a few commercial properties, but they're not buying 3 a month, right? Those people see almost as many. They won't see as many deals as I do when we have, you know, we have 18 live contracts, right? And that's a majority of industrial, multifamily, retail, and some other types. But 18, I mean, right? We're seeing a ton of market activity, seeing what buyers and sellers are doing, retrades, what the lenders want, procedures. So that's the kind of expertise into that process that we can help the investor say, hey, you've only done one or two other deals in the last 2 years. You're not in tune kind of to the market. We really help people put either clauses in to protect them, to give them an out, protect their earnest money and let them terminate. Or again, escrow holdbacks are kind of this new thing. And we're seeing a lot more activity where you have this disconnect. I'm not sure when this will go live, but right, end of 2022, with the interest rates going up and sellers feeling like 6 months ago, I would have gotten X for my property. And you yeah. said, well, sure, but it's not 6 months ago. And they're still clinging to these old comps, this old value that they want to get, they hope to get, but the buyer saying, I'm not going to pay X, I'll pay you Y, which is the market yep. today or the market in 3 months. So escrow holdbacks are an interesting kind of way to split the baby. And it says, I will pay you a higher price than what I, Mr. Buyer, am underwriting if certain financial metrics are met, or if something else happens, which is financially valuable to me in the future. You know, the seller's, oh, this is great. Oh yeah, everybody pays on time. It's great, blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. Okay. If that's true, then I'll pay you, you know, extra million, $2 million. If it's not, then it's refunded back to me. And that can be kind of a win-win. It's complicated, but that's one way that we're seeing that gets deals done, and you don't have an impasse. You don't have the seller mm-hmm. right here and the buyer here. You can do an escrow and kind of meet in the middle where both sides feel protected, right? As a buyer, I think you're happy. You right. say, yeah, I was willing to pay the higher price, sure. but I couldn't guarantee a certain events in the future would occur. And the seller says, well, nobody else is offering me X, but at least I have a shot at yeah. collecting in the future.
Yeah, exactly. You're seeing that tied to what types of financial events. Is it interest rate driven or more performance of the asset driven?
Performance of the asset.
Things that presumably the seller has represented and the buyer saying, yeah, maybe let's see
like if it actually transpires. Yeah, so like multifamily collections, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Multifamily collections or different expense side. I think it's mostly collections, but top and line.
Typically is over a course of how many months into the future?
6 to 12.
And then the money's held in your account, so somebody's trust account.
You know, most of our deals are closed with a title company.
Title company.
So the escrow agent is the title company.
And then holding the funds in that. The buyer puts it up in hard money and it's released to somebody at the end of that defined period of time.
Correct.
A very interesting and creative way to execute to be able to get things done. I can imagine how complicated they are.
Complicated yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about beginning commercial real estate investors. Where do you see, you know, people getting it really, really right? Say, you know, in the first handful of deals, or where do you see people just screwing up somewhere in the process that you've got to rush in and save them? Or even if you can, or if they're too late and making a mistake?
I think that you really make it right by buying the good location. You know, that's really true for any asset class, because that's kind of that buffer or that's cushion of, you know, you screw up, you make mistakes. The tenant at the end of the day, they're going to be the most forgiving on location, which they can't replicate. They can't move. I've had tenants say, oh, you know, this place out here is like $7 a foot and like go lease out there. Do you realize that's 17 miles away? That's 30 minutes on a good day. And your workers who live close by and your client sites who are close by, you're going to go 30 minutes the other way, 30 minutes back, an hour every day of wasted productivity just to save, you know, $7,000 or $5,000 a month.
Right.
I mean, does that make sense for your business? And they'll moan about it, but mm-hmm. they take the increase because they know that the location is really key. And so yeah. location is one of those things that can kind of wash over some sins. You make mistakes, you overpay for an asset, yeah. you have above market rent. Well, you can wait till the market yeah. kind of catches up if it's infill and it's a great location. You know, I think that's true for retail. It's true for industrial, yeah. true for multifamily. If you buy an asset out in the boonies, or you buy an asset in a bad part of town, just thinking, I got a great 10 cap strip center. You lose half your tenants, nobody's coming back. Nobody's knocking on your door. Location, really a big X factor that can help new people wash over some sins.
Have you been to the vault? RealGritVault.com. Listen, we've got multiple guests who come on and oftentimes they bring us little tips, tricks, tools, scripts, Excel calculators, a multitude of things, and they share it. They share it for you. You can get them totally free, totally free. RealGritVault.com. Never been on the show who's brought everything. It's all behind the vault. Get it. RealGritVault.com. Yeah. Talk to me on the paperwork side of things. Let's pivot to there.
Yeah.
Where do you see younger crowd, if you will, the newer to this space? Get it right or get it wrong.
Yeah. I think the timing events. So putting more triggers or not understanding what your contingencies are, you know, what has to occur for them to be released, whether it's automatic, whether there's a written waiver. You know, we work with a lot of investors from the coast, right? So like your California buyer, they've got $300,000 to deploy and they're like, well, I can buy an SFR in Bay Area and rent it out for a $300 a month profit,
right?
But they like the location, it's close by, yada, yada. Or I could buy this $1.2 million retail in, you know, Columbus, but they're not used to the contingencies and time is of the essence. And I guess it's back to my point, but people don't read the contract enough and they just bring to me a signed, you know, broker form contract, which, you know, certain brokers shall remain nameless, but they produce a lot of these form contracts, which are very efficient and they work towards locking the buyer in, making their money go hard, and then speeding you towards a close. And that's the biggest thing. I think people sign it and they just don't realize the rate at which things have to occur. You get the title commitment. When are objections due? When do you need to respond? Okay, when is a financing contingency? You know, they say they give you one, but seller due diligence isn't due for 15 days into your 30-day due diligence. Well, that's useless. You know, they think about the right relative timing.
Yeah. No, I think that's totally fair to say that unless you produce the purchase agreement, you should be skeptical of whose favor it's written for.
For sure.
One of the top, you know, maybe two or three things that when a buyer should be pulling, or a seller for that matter, should be pulling their attorney into a transaction. When's the time they should be getting advice from somebody like you?
Yeah. So I think there's two normal demarcations, right? If you're kind of off market and you're just reaching out, if you're unrepresented, you can bring us in at the LOI. I do think it adds credibility. We do it very effectively just to draft up and submit and negotiate LOIs, or when you're ready to negotiate the PSA. So the second most common is when somebody brings me a signed LOI and then they say, draft a PSA off of this or review a PSA that was given to me based on our signed LOI. And that's very natural and it gives us good information to work off of so that we can actually, you know, be helpful. Is we need that signed LOI and next PSA level. But really that's when we come in the transaction.
Yeah.
No. If it's after the signed PSA, you know, we're less useful because everything is locked in at that point.
Correct. Yeah. When you look forward both on your investment side and your law firm, you know, look forward 1-3-5 years, where are you headed? What's it look like?
I definitely want to keep both going. You know, to me, they both provide different challenges. One is obviously more active income and kind of pays the mortgage and keeps my wife happy and our kids fed and that sort of thing. And then the investments, it's a longer term. I think in 5 years, I would like to have exited one small portfolio exit. So we're trying to bundle some assets and exit that. But then thereafter, just be building on a city by city basis. You know, a good friend of mine that has a much bigger portfolio, but he was saying Dallas has plenty of money to be made, even in industrial, even in DFW, without ever going to say like Houston or ever venturing to Austin. But that said, in 5 years, you know, I want to be replicating the analysis that we do in Atlanta or Jacksonville or Columbus, because that to me is the only thing is, you know, how big can you go?
Yeah, no, that's exciting. Well, we've recently, just a handful of months ago, launched the Real Grit Vault. It's a collection of resources available to our listeners. And I understand you brought contribution to the vault today. I'll just let you elaborate on what you've contributed here for the listener's benefit, which is totally free. You guys can get it on the website.
Absolutely. So we've prepared a LOI, so a letter of interest to purchase for an industrial property. You know, this is a short, concise document. We talk a little bit about who should prepare this and how you take into account who the audience is, because I talk about this a lot, but a sophisticated seller, you do want to include more details because they have the appetite, they have the patience, and it's going to impress them more to fully or more flush out the parameter of the off. If you have a mom and pop seller, it's got to be half of the length of an LOI because you need to be very to the point, punchy, purchase price, escrow, earnest money, boom, boom, boom. And they'll evaluate from there. But yeah, so happy to submit that document. It will protect you. It makes it non-binding. You get the tip too, which is the LOI needs to be as short as possible to contain all of your deal killers. And that's hard. That's not always easy to do. People want to throw in some fluff about terms that nobody will disagree about. And like, that doesn't really get to a conflict between the buyer and seller. And you're going to waste time on a PSA.
Correct.
And the deal might kill when they say, no, absolutely not. We are not doing X.
Correct. Flush those deal killers out early. Yeah, no, that's great. You guys can get it at www.realgritvault.com. So I want to move on to the final segment, Ryan, what I call four for impact.
Four for impact.
Your favorite quote, a ship in harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are built for. What about that resonates most with you?
I love a good analogy.
Yeah.
I'm partial to it. But, you know, being on a ship or everybody pulling together is just a really good analogy for commercial real estate, which is such a team effort. It's a team sport compared to, you know, people doing day trading or Amazon drop shipping, you know, coding, where you can really just kind of do it by yourself and with a couple of other remote. But real estate is a team sport. You know, you've got to have your lender, your broker, your listing agent, your leasing agent, your accountant, property manager, inspector, there's lawyer, account, all these people, insurance guys, and it's a team sport. And what is more important than everybody being a rock star or even one person being a rock star is that everybody's pulling in the same direction. And to do that, you know, you need to know where you're going. You need to set your own goals. And all of these things are so important. And none of that matters if you don't leave the harbor, which is more introspection. But what is a human built for? What is mankind meant for? And I think the answer to that is to, you know, strive and to try to build the biggest or the best thing that you can do in using your unique talents and just try. I mean, you know what that scale is. If you don't try and leave the harbor and try to do something bigger, how will you ever know what you're capable
of? You'll never know. Right. That leads me into my next question really well. What do you think holds most investors back from hitting their personal next level?
I think they do overcomplicate commercial real estate investing because in the SFR world, it's easy to have a bit of arrogance. If you're halfway sophisticated, you can run some models and you can do some demographic and MLS access and look at the comps and do all this. And you're like, oh, well, you know, it's so easy. You feel a sense of pride or I'll say arrogance, but it is kind of just arrogance. Oh, I know what I'm doing. But then when you go into commercial, you suddenly are stripped of that arrogance because now you're going against institutional, the BlackRocks, and are you bidding against Prologis? And why isn't Prologis paying the price that you're willing to pay? It causes a lot of people to have insecurity and they easily vacillate between I'm overpaying for this asset.
Yes.
Or I'm competing against them and that's why I'm losing. Yeah. So it's really easy to become a victim and just not do anything because of the types of competitors in the space. But you know, my antidote to that is stay in your lane, become an expert and drill down however small of a space you need to be, become that expert again. Because you know, I'll tell you that I feel rightly or wrongly a pretty high level of confidence. You can give me any site in DFW. You give me the cross streets. Tell me how many acres. You tell me what the zoning is for. If I can do some of my normal tenant stuff, I'll tell you what the max rental revenue right now potentially is. And I'll tell you what I'll pay for it really quickly. I will pay that kind of independent of big firms, you know, they don't want to buy small assets. I don't care who I'm buying it from. I can buy it from the smallest of sellers. The property can be in any condition, short of environmental big stuff, but I'll fix it up. I got the people, we've got the budget, I can do all that. And I'll say, well, why isn't Prologis buying this? Well, it's too small. Their costs to underwrite a deal are $100,000. They just can't do it. They can't spend $100,000 to make profit of $1 million. But for me, I can spend $10,000 to make $1 million on a site. So that's kind of the difference, you know? And if you try to make me do that in Houston, I can't tell you. I have no idea what rental rates in Atlanta are. I'm not buying in Atlanta and I would never buy, right? That's part of the difference too, I think.
Correct.
Is people say, I like multifamily in Ohio.
Yep.
Well, what the heck does that mean? There's 7,000 multifamily buildings in Ohio. I buy multifamily, you know, like Dayton or like Cleveland. Okay, great. So now there's 1,800 buildings. Like it still doesn't help. You need to say, I buy in Erie, Pennsylvania. There are 52 potential buildings. And I know who the 42 owners are of those 52 buildings. And I know who might, you know, sell to me. Because that's the kind of specificity that gives you maybe confidence again to buy. Because if you know all 52 buildings in Erie, Pennsylvania, it's kind of cool, right? Somebody sends you an address and you're like, oh yeah, that's owned by Neil and his brother.
Right. goes past confidence, right? It also increases your likelihood of a potential deal. Because people get confused when there's too many choices. A confused mind says no. When there's too many things out there, you're cast too wide a net. It doesn't somehow increase your deal flow. It actually does the opposite.
Right.
You won't get sharp enough to make confident decisions.
And act quickly. And again, the market is always changing too. So correct. To your point, if you're not sharpening your underwriting faster than the market is changing,
right.
you are never going to be good enough to do a deal. There's a call to action then. Reach out to the law firm today. We are your law firm to help you buy your next investment deal. No more decisions.
That's right. Outside of real estate, what are you most passionate about?
We've got two kids, another on the way, and just love little kids. They're in that under five range.
You're busy, man.
It's almost like every day, every week, they're changing and they soak up everything that you do. So my wife and I are just very conscious of spending time and enjoying it while we can.
Yeah, it's terrific. What's your favorite way to make an impact in the community?
I think that I'm very active in the Taiwanese Chinese community. I grew up here in Texas, which, you know, makes me sound old, and I do it all the time. But back then, there was not as many Asian faces. There was not as many people who look like me. So I'm very active in the chambers of commerce now. We do like different charity events and food drives. And I think just being active and visible is a lot to influence the kind of next generation of investors and legal professionals and everybody.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. Ron, I appreciate you taking the time to connect up here. It's a great conversation. It's fun to hear how you, your experience in investing and then what you do, call it a day job, right? Interweave and how you can benefit on both sides of that coin, right? Your investment experience drives how you can see buyers and sellers in a different light and ultimately get yourself in different positions as a result. And then the day job, if you will, drives the conversations you have on the other side of it. It's really great. I appreciate you taking the time out here. If people want to find you, they want to follow you, they want to connect with you, where should they go? What should they do?
Best way is on YouTube. We publish a lot of content on there. Ronald Rohde Law, RonaldRohdeLaw. Just pop it in the search bar. But we post a lot. And again, we talk about industrial and this kind of mindset and day in the life of CRE investor, that sort of thing. But YouTube, and then we're on the internet. So ronaldrohdelaw.com.
Perfect. We'll make sure we get the links to both the YouTube channel and then to the website posted below in the show notes for everybody. Ron, I appreciate the time.
Thanks, Tim.
You bet. Hey, for everybody here at Real Grit, I'm Neil Timmons, reminding you that real estate requires real grit. See you next time. If you like our content and want more, you can access it at realgritpodcast.com. You hear it guest after guest. Instinctively, you already know it. But let me call it out. The most expensive action is inaction. The real estate market is full of opportunities. You just need to uncover them. You can build a business that lasts for years, makes monumental impact in the lives of those that you love. It's not just about business, but about the freedom you get because of it. Have you ever heard the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. I believe that partnering is essential. In fact, I partner with hardworking investors all the time. The point is that you can get a lot further with the right partner. Let me say it again, the right partner. If you've ever thought about partnering with anyone, or if you have a partner now, I encourage you to download my free Partner and Profit Guide, which includes the top 5 must answer questions to evaluate a profitable partnership. You can find it at www.legacyimpactpartners.com. I'll see you in the next episode. Hey, it's Neil Timmons. I've got a question for you. Are you a fix and flipper and want to leverage your skills, build passive income, create bigger paydays? Maybe you buy and hold rental houses and you want to increase your income by working less. Maybe you're executing on the Burr methodology and times being what they are, you're finding more cash locked into a deal. Maybe you want more predictable profits, or maybe this is your first go at real estate. Well, I've got a challenge for you. The 20X Profit Challenge. It's hosted and taught by yours truly. I'm going to teach and show you over the course of 5 days in this totally free challenge, how to 20X your profit. Lesson one's a game changer, multiplying your income and capital fast. Lesson two is the perfect plan. I'm going to show you how to be getting off market 20X profit deals coming to you. The cash flow multipliers, lesson three, how to rapidly force appreciation and income growth. Lesson four is the deal accelerator, buying and holding profit guarantee properties. And lesson five, the wealth accumulator, consistently closing a 20X profit deals. I'm going to show you exactly my methodology, exactly what I did to go from where I was at, not achieving the results I wanted to achieve in my life, not achieving that passive income that I hoped for, that I knew I was capable of, and in 3.5 years, becoming financially free. I'm going to do that in a 5-day free challenge. To sign up, go to 20xprofitchallenge.com. 20xprofitchallenge.com. We've got one coming up. Go there now. Register. It's totally free. 20xprofitchallenge.com. And I'll see you in the challenge.